Hello, my name is Ben Jenkins, and welcome back to another episode of the New Go Radio podcast. Starting off as a registered nurse is a daunting experience for a variety of reasons. Over the last 2 years, I'd like to think that I've shared many of my own first-hand experiences of these challenges with you. A particular area that I struggled with, and I find that a lot of other graduate nurses struggle with, is understanding how to work with doctors. Now, what I mean by that is it can often be an intimidating experience of understanding how to present information to medical staff, knowing what doctor to relay that information onto, understanding at what stage they would like to be notified and exactly what they would like to be notified about. Even the simple act of picking up the phone and speaking with a doctor can be a lot harder than you'd think. So the purpose of today's episode is being able to speak with Lewis Robinson. Lewis studied a Bachelor of Medicine and Bachelor of Surgery at the University of Queensland and is currently working as an SHO, or a senior house officer, just finished up with the emergency department, is now just rotated onto the intensive care unit. I've worked beside Lewis for the past year now, and I've seen firsthand just how motivated, caring, and switched on he is as a doctor. And a big reason I've asked Lewis to share his experiences on the podcast today is just how approachable he is and how well he works with his nursing staff and the entirety of the interprofessional team. On today's episode, it's all about getting from the perspective of the doctor. Lewis starts off by sharing his journey into medicine and going over some of the reasons why he wanted to become a doctor. We talk about some of the different areas that student doctors have to go through, as well as Lewis's own experiences of starting off after uni, starting as an intern, and then working his way towards where he is now as an SHO. And I think that Lewis does a fantastic job of being able to break down and really elaborate on the differences in the hierarchies of doctors, starting off with interns and your residents and going all the way up to the consultants. And Lewis sort of talks about some of the expectations of what is expected of that particular of rank of a doctor as well. So I think there are so many golden nuggets that Lewis drops within this episode that anyone from any level of nursing can really learn from and take something away from as well. So anyway, guys, I'm so excited to share this episode with you today with my interview with Lewis Robinson. Hi there, Lewis, and thank you so much for being on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me on, Ben.
Oh, it's so awesome. There's not too many opportunities that we really get to hear firsthand from a doctor, so it's going to be great to hear about your story and your time through medical school and just getting into the nitty-gritty of how to really work that cohesively between nurses and doctors as well. So should be an awesome chat today. I can't wait to learn a bit more about you. So Lewis, to start off with today, I'd just love to have a bit of a backstory. What sort of got you into wanting to become a doctor?
Well, I think, Ben, the things that got me interested in medicine first up were kind of in my earlier kind of teenage years. I guess I had a personal experience with illness and really being myself in the patient experience when I was diagnosed with an illness, and I had kind of regular investigations and follow up with an oncologist when I was a teenager. And I kind of even now I still remember the way that doctor kind of spoke to me and guided me through the treatment period with kind of lots of patience and compassion. And I've always thought it was so important the way that his manner has kind of stuck with me for all these times. I guess in medicine and healthcare in general, you have this opportunity to deal with people when they're at their most vulnerable. And for me, that was my time as a scared teenager with an illness that I didn't understand. And his method of communication really made me feel empowered to understand my own illness. So it's kind of with that I view working in healthcare as the most special job that there is in society, because you get that opportunity to work with people when they're vulnerable. And just remembering that the way that you speak to people and how you can explain things can really, really stick with somebody for the rest of their life. The other, I guess, experience that really struck home how important this sort of work is I grew up for a number of years in an Aboriginal community in the far north of the Northern Territory, kind of 500 kilometres east of Darwin. So there's kind of 2,000 people in the community and one doctor and two nurses for the entire community. And living up there as a kid, you get exposed to these almost forgotten diseases, things like rheumatic heart disease and tuberculosis, things that you don't see in suburban kind of practice. And you kind of I got this firsthand experience of the social determinants that were going into at that time what was a 10-year life expectancy gap between Aboriginal and other Australians. I got an idea of just how important this kind of work is for ensuring that people can live a good life. And it's also inspired me, I guess, that you can take the skills that you learn from working in a metropolitan environment and take them out to these areas and really, really make a difference. There's so many things that you can do with a nursing qualification and these skills, and you can really make a difference out in those other fields.
That's incredible, Lewis. I really did not know any of what you're saying. Oh, that's incredible stuff. I was just want to take you back to what you're originally saying about your experience with that particular doctor as well. You haven't heard this little piece of audio just yet, but in the introduction that I made, I said one of the reasons why I've asked you today to be on this particular podcast is the way that I've seen you communicate with patients. The ability that you've been able to communicate with the interprofessional team, and just how approachable you are and how compassionate that you are. So just wanted to sort of pass that on to you to be like, well, now you might have experienced that as a teenager, but this is how I have seen it, at least for the last year that I've really probably known you, of how you're communicating as a doctor. So just wanted to say thank you up front for that one, mate. You're doing a fantastic job.
Oh, thanks, Ben. I appreciate it.
For sure. It's the compassion and your enthusiasm for your job definitely shines through. So, Lewis, again, I guess that's it then, yeah? So you've gone, that's it, I want to become a doctor. So what was your journey into medicine then? How did you
So that's where the hard work starts, unfortunately. So there's kind of the qualification you have to meet really to get a spot in medical school is doing well on an exam. The one I sat was called the UMAT, which is the undergraduate admissions test, which is a Australia-wide test that tests your aptitude, I guess, in areas like emotional intelligence and problem solving. That's the test that I sat to get in as an undergraduate. The other more common entry method is sitting in a test called the GAMSAT, which is the graduate version, which also tests your knowledge of the basic sciences. So after you do that test, and that was, I sat it in year 12 of high school, after a lot of sleepless weekends studying for that test, I got my spot into medicine. And most of the courses in Australia now are postgraduate medical degrees. So I did my undergraduate degree in biomedical science. I accelerated my 3-year degree down to 2 years. And then I progressed into my kind of medical training. In the biomedical science part, I did do anatomy and different courses that were really relevant, and things like psychology and other areas that you don't learn as much about in medical school. When I started my medical degree, that's a 4-year degree. I did a Bachelor of Medicine, Bachelor of Surgery. The first 2 years are more classical uni studies, lectures, lab sessions and assessments, and then the second 2 years have a more clinical focus. So you're out in the hospital, you're shadowing teams, and you do a short rotation in each of the different disciplines, and with associated assessments throughout that. So there's compulsory rotations that you must do in medical school, and they go across basically all the subspecialties. So every medical student has to have a term in obstetrics and gynecology and have to deliver 4 babies as part of their training. Every medical student has to go through the emergency department and also spend time on a general medical ward and a surgical ward. So, and also out in general practice as well for a short period. So you do get a little taste of all the different areas of the healthcare system, and I think that's important because you get an idea of I guess a patient's whole journey through the health system. Yeah.
No, we're just saying before we push record today, it's just to say that as nurses and nursing students, we don't really have a lot of contact with you as medical students and going through as doctors. So it's whilst it may be sort of simplistic for some sort of listeners today, just hearing that this is the UMAT, this is the GEMSAT, this is the 4 years of medical school, I think that unless you really have graduated and you start talking to doctors, we don't really get a lot of contact. So I'm finding this fascinating. I didn't really know that you had to do all of these different sort of placements either. I know as nursing students, it really comes down to the way that we're sort of placed on our clinical placements. We don't have to have a certain minimum time in different sort of placements. So some nursing students may go through uni and they may have aged care, may go on to a particular like gen surg, you may have then a sort of clinical placement and a few other ones here and there, but you may not ever go through your nursing placements and ever get anything of what you're really after, such as like emergency or intensive care. So I guess that's where we sort of differ and that little bit as well. So at least it sounds like you get a bit of a tasting and sort of find an area that you may really enjoy. Did you find when you went through that, did you really just take your liking to emergency nursing? Emergency medicine?
To be honest, I found that most of the specialties I really enjoyed for different aspects and for different periods of time. So I was one of those students who certainly had moments where I could see myself being a surgeon and moments where I could see myself doing obstetrics. But it was the longevity of enjoying my work in emergency beyond that time and still loving it after a few months that kind of set it aside from the other specialties. Yeah.
No, it's incredible. So once you have graduated, which I can imagine that there would have been quite a few sleepless nights and all those final big exams coming up, but now you finally finish your university, finally finish your degree. What was the next step after that?
So once you're out, you get the opportunity to be registered with the medical board, and you get the opportunity to have a prescriber number. So that means that you can prescribe under medications under Medicare. And you start your first job as an intern is the slang for the first year doctors. But what an intern really is it's a resident medical officer. So that's the first level of being a doctor within the hospital system. And in Australia, all doctors must be a resident for at least 1 year, usually at least 2 years. So there's different levels within being a resident medical officer. The first year is the infamous intern year, where you haven't practiced before as a doctor, and it can be quite a steep learning curve despite all these years you've spent learning anatomy. After you, as an intern, you rotate between different disciplines. So you have to do 10 weeks of general medicine. You have to do 10 weeks of general surgery as well as 10 weeks in the emergency department. The other rotations are kind of hospital specific. But I had some exposure to mental health, psychiatry, and a few other things in neurology, I believe, in my intern year. From there, in the rest of your resident years, you continue rotating around different disciplines in the hospital. So generally, you'll be doing 5 rotations a year of 10 weeks through different specialties, and you often don't have much of a choice in those first. At least 2 years over which disciplines that you're in. Usually the hospital just puts you where you're needed more than anything else. So that's the first stage of being a doctor, the resident medical officer years. And at the moment, I'm currently working as a senior resident. So I'm still in that first stage of my training. The next step from there, so the mid-range of doctors in the hospital system are the registrars. What's different about a registrar compared to a resident is that they're training in their specialty already. So they have chosen their specific specialty. They're registered with the college that determines training in that specialty, and they've done a certain number of years just doing that area of medicine. So they're the expert in a lot of these a lot of the challenges that come up in the hospital. They're the generally the go-to person who makes a lot of decisions. Sure. Sitting at the top of the medical tree is the consultant. So the consultant is the fully qualified doctor who's registered with the one of the specialty colleges and has completed all of the requirements of that college to be practicing as a consultant. In all Australian hospitals, we practice what we call kind of consultant-led care. So there should be a consultant assigned to every patient that's in the hospital. And at the end of the day, that consultant is really responsible for the care that they receive. So they're the three kind of main levels of doctors within the hospital: the residents, the registrars, and the consultants.
I guess what I'm hearing, Lewis, is that you do get such a plethora of different experiences as you've come out of not only during medical school, but then you also get to keep practicing when you first come into being a doctor. I guess there's sort of multiple ways of looking at that. I guess number one is that the skills that you must develop in all of these different areas are just constantly, no matter where, what specialty that you end up choosing on doing, at least you've got so many different experiences to be able to draw from. But I guess it must be pretty challenging as well that if you're dead set that you want to be a particular specialist of a doctor, I guess waiting even more than 2 years to really start pushing towards that specialty, that must be pretty hard.
It can be really, really difficult, and it's very challenging as a junior doctor changing your specialty so many times and changing your area. Because although you might be quite good at orthopedics, when you end up on ophthalmology for 6 weeks, you can feel like you don't really know what you're doing, and you, sometimes you don't have that subspecialty kind of knowledge. But it's important to keep in mind that you do have those base medical skills from all the different specialties, and you can still use them to make good decisions with some help from people who know the specialty better than you do. And I find that can be some of the most useful point for working closely with my nursing colleagues in specific areas, who often are quite specialist on the renal team, for example, and may know a lot more about transplant medicine than you do when you come in as your first week there. So you can, by working together, you can combine your nursing colleagues' subspecialty knowledge with your base experience in medicine and really work together to deliver some excellent kind of patient care.
And that's exactly what I've seen from you, Lewis, as well, that especially from a nursing perspective, we love helping. we love just working as part of that big team. I guess when you first start off as a registered nurse, it's difficult. I don't know, I think you see the way that the more senior nurses start interacting with the doctors, and you see that real teamwork that they sort of bond together. And as a new nurse coming through, not only are you trying to gain your own feet about working in that particular area, where I've come into it starting in intensive care and this year now transitioning into emergency, but so I think the more that you start keep plodding along, you see it getting understand your own job, then that communication with the doctors start to become that little bit easier. So it's incredible. But I think the next sort of line of questioning I was wanting to ask you, Lewis, I guess it's starting off as a registered nurse, it can often be quite challenging on knowing how to communicate effectively with the medical staff. I was just talking through my own experiences. I guess the way I sort of learned to be able to deliver information concisely really just started to come with time. And the more time I'd keep coming up to a doctor, for example, I'd pull an arterial blood gas because I was worried about, I was looking at someone's potassium. And I'd pull it and I'd sort of go up to the doctor with the ABG slip, and I'd go up and sort of show them. And so the doctors would then ask me like, okay, so what patient's this for? This is actually for bed space 21. Okay, so what was the indication for pulling the gas? Oh, yeah, that's right. So this is for potassium. And you feel so silly when you're first going up because you really are just wanting to help and you feel like you're doing the right thing. But I guess with the doctor's patience and you going up time after time and learning little by little, I guess that's how I started to learn. And just doctor specific as well. Like some doctors want information presented in a certain way, but I don't know. I guess for all the nurses listening to this who might be experiencing the same thing or is just starting off or about to start off into nursing, I guess it really is a bit of a time thing. Is that what you sort of experience with new nurses as well? that challenge of being able to try to deliver information concisely to you?
Yeah, look, I think it's always difficult, and I think you've hit the nail on the head there that knowing the story of the patient is really important when you're coming up to one of the doctors to ask for their advice. Often the medical team are looking after a larger number of patients, so often in that situation you're the person who knows the patient best, and having that information and being able to deliver that in a concise format is really important. And I think being able to understand your decision making in that, for example, in the case you mentioned, you were worried about the potassium, so you pulled off a blood gas. Also, looking at the patient history and wondering why might their potassium be off? Do they have problems with their kidneys? And what treatment have we had for their potassium in the past? And maybe the next step then, which would be, do they have any issues with their ECG that could be a result of that potassium being off? I think by thinking yourself through those steps, which comes with experience, but making an attempt to think through the next stage is really useful. So when you do go up to the medical officer, you can say, look, I was worried about the potassium. Here's the gas that I've done, and I did an ECG as well. What do you think? We treated it with they have some problems with their kidneys, so we treated it last time with insulin. Should we do that again? What do you think? And in that, you've summed up the whole decision-making process, and you've made it concise, and you've delivered it into the doctor the way that they can really make a decision on the spot with just the information that you've given them. So I think every time that you're thinking about a problem that you've got that you need to speak to the medical officers about, just try to think through the next steps of what do we need to do to fix this, and what would I do if it was up to me, and then by thinking through those steps, you can grab those pieces of information and really come with a cohesive story to really tell, and you can get a decision done on the spot.
I guess also when you first start, and I think this is what's been great about listening to the different levels that you've described of the hierarchy of the doctors. But I guess it's really challenging when you're first starting off, just understanding which doctor I need to come up and speak to. It's I guess this is one of the big reasons I wanted to sort of have that hierarchy outlined, to sort of be like, okay, this is your junior registrar in intensive care, for example. All we really have, and all I've ever known when I first started, was this is a junior registrar, this is a senior registrar, and it's a consultant. And my hierarchy, I'm always going to sort of start off with JR and sort of work through the chain of command to get its way up, and that decision gets made. And even starting off, I sort of, as silly as it probably will sound to you, Lewis, it was a big deal even starting off just getting on the phone and being able to say, hi, this is Ben in bed space 21. I'm looking after this particular patient. Like, it's nerve-wracking. Like, it really is being able to pick up the phone and have a chat to you guys is a big deal. In any sort of circumstance, is that the sort of way that you go through it? You sort of start off with your junior reg in intensive care, for example, and then coming into emergency, it was a completely different thing. Again, here at sometimes I'm seeing that there's medical students there, and then there's different terminologies. There was like a JHO and all this other sort of stuff. And I'm like, what is going on? There's so many different names for all these different levels of doctors. It can be pretty hard to navigate as a new nurse.
Sorry, it can be really difficult, and it can get confusing. But I guess at the end of the day, it's I would recommend going to whoever is working at the resident level first. So there's different ICU at our hospital is a little bit of a special case, I guess. But generally, there'll be a resident assigned to the team, whether they're an intern, a JHO, which is a junior house officer, or an SHO, which I was working as in the emergency department. Generally, you'll have a resident at one of those levels. They're really the first point of call, and they're from the medical side. They're the kind of the coordinator of that patient's care. So they're the best person to communicate with, not because they're always the person who makes the decisions, but because they know the patient the best from the medical team. They're the one who took the history, they know the background, and they're the ones who will probably prescribe the medication. So they're the best person to talk to first up. And that kind of closes the communication loop as well. So by all information going through that resident, they know everything that's happening with the patient. They can also work closely with you when you've brought up the issue, such as the high potassium, and go and find out more information if they need it before they get we get the registrar or the consultant involved. So I think it's important to go through the resident for most of the time. You were mentioning ICU and having the junior registrar as the kind of I guess the most junior in the ICU team, and that is true. At our hospital in the intensive care unit, we don't really have interns or JHOs working there, and the reason being is the patients are so complex, and the jobs that we need to do are quite difficult. Even simple things like the venipuncture is extremely difficult in these patients. That we've kind of skipped that level, and the junior registrar is the person who you talk to instead of the resident, so they kind of cover the resident job, so to speak. I will mention though that there are times when you can't always go to the resident, and that's really when things are urgent or serious, and you can't get hold of the resident, and there's no time to waste to look for them. In those kind of instances, you'd be well within you'd be right to call the registrar directly. In other circumstances, maybe the RMO is aware of the problem, but you see that they're maybe not taking it seriously enough, or that the patient is suffering a worse outcome because of their management, and you need another opinion. That can get more difficult, and I'd often, as a new graduate nurse, I'd advise that if at all possible, to go up your chain of command first, so to go and speak to your team leader, whoever is the next in charge in that level, and then the team leader can often speak to the consultant who would be my boss directly, and then they can filter down to me and if there is a problem. So I think when you're running into trouble, it can be useful to go up your chain of command and let the bosses talk, and then that will filter back down to the resident level. But certainly at any point, if you're concerned and something is urgent and you think it can't wait, if you can't get hold of the resident, you can always call the registrar or the consultant.
Well, thank you so much for that piece of feedback there, Lewis. That's fantastic. That helps out really well. You sort of see when you're going through starting as a nurse, you start seeing all of these sort of things happening behind the scenes, but you don't really completely understand. But I think you've summed it up extremely well there about how the doctors do work together and how those decisions sort of seem to get made. What else can we sort of talk about in terms of team cohesiveness? Oh, it's before you head into that, like I'd love to talk about the way that the doctors first come in. So I'm going to use the example of the emergency department now, because this is how I sort of see it really highlighted as well. You sort of mentioned that the interns, the JHOs, the SHOs sort of role, like they're the sort of ones that are coming in almost the first, like you're coming in and getting, you're assigning yourself to that patient. You're coming in, you're getting that first baseline information. What is the sort of expectations of you as a doctor from your boss? What's the sort of information that you're trying to collect? And then do you take that and then you go and always discuss it with your registrar? Is that how it works?
Yeah. So in the emergency department, for each patient that comes into one of the acute cubicles, one of the junior medical officers, so one of the residents, will assign themselves to that patient. And for the duration of their stay in the emergency department, that patient will be the responsibility of that resident until that resident finishes shift and hands over to another person at their level. So there's always a resident that's the core medical officer involved. So when you come in to a new patient, obviously the first thing that we do in emergency always is go through the ABCs. So we make sure they're stable, and often in the acute cubicles, often there's nothing we need to do right now to address those ABCs. Then we can kind of go into our assessment, which involves our history, where we go through their presenting complaint and their background, what medications they're on and those sort of things. And then we can do a physical examination. The physical examination also includes their observations in the emergency department, because most of the patients are on telemetry and getting their rhythm and their pulse oximetry constantly checked. And from there, we can do the special kind of bedside investigations, things like blood sugar levels, which ECGs and things like blood gases as well. So they're the kind of the next step of, in my mind, the examination. From there, we often have a think about what we think the diagnosis is and what we need to do to further investigate it. Further investigations might be things like chest X-rays and blood tests to further evaluate the problem. Often all of that first stage of management will be handled by the resident without much oversight from the registrar or the consultant. So most of that happens just according to the resident. At that point, once we have some of those investigations back and things are a bit clearer, you often go to the registrar then. So each patient that comes through also needs a senior doctor to assign their name to it in our emergency department. So generally then you'll speak to the registrar or sometimes to the consultant directly and let them know that Mr. Jones has chest pain, his troponin was positive, and here's the ECG. I wanted to give these drugs. What do you think, boss? And they'll tell you what they think should be the next steps in management, if they agree with your plan. And if they don't, or if the patient sounds very unwell, they'll often come and see the patient themselves. So depending on how sick they are or how difficult the diagnosis is, the registrar or the consultant will often come in and kind of examine the patient themselves. But the process of us evaluating them first and getting a lot of those investigations back really is a time-saving thing for the senior doctors who often are looking after 20, 25 patients at a time, who unfortunately don't have time to see every person.
No, because I think that's where it can be challenging starting off as that nurse. That's some sort of saying that you've got all these different sort of doctors around, and I've got you, Lewis, that may come in and see the patient, and all of a sudden I've got another senior doctor coming into the bed space, and it's like who's who in the zoo is coming in and seeing that patient. So it's nice to sort of hear of how exactly it sort of works, and over time I've learned to see what you're talking about. When you first start, I guess that's where it's a bit more challenging. So. No, thank you for going over that as well. And it's great to hear from what you are going through as like the resident, getting through all this sort of all these hierarchies as well, and what's expected from you from your boss. So it's some of the things that I sort of have learnt to do from my nursing staff sort of showing me stuff, and from some of the doctors is like, okay, well, maybe you might be able to already put a cannula in and take some bloods if that's the same sort of presentation that's come along a few times. You know, that's how it's done. Coming in there, already getting the ECG on board, and so anything that we can sort of do to help you is what I know from my perspective, that's what I try to do as much as possible. So it's, I guess, again, a big thing for anyone listening, it's sort of it does all just come with time. But thank you for so much for going over this sort of stuff today, Lewis. It helps immensely, and I hope it helps some other people to understand a bit more as well. Is there anything else that you would like to bring up, Lewis, today for nursing staff or just anything in general when it comes to medicine?
Well, I think Ben, I've got some tips for making the healthcare team as cohesive as possible, and for really making doctors and nurses best friends as we should be, and as the patient really deserves. I think so. Look, I think the first and probably the most important point is just to remember that we're all on the same team, and that team is really trying to do what's best for the patient. We all want what's best for the patient, but we all have different responsibilities in our line of work, and they come with it their own challenges. At times it can be difficult, and managing your time in both of our careers is very difficult with the demands that are on us in the public healthcare system. Sometimes if I haven't made it to the bed space, as you requested an hour ago to talk to the family for the lady in bed 4, it's not that we don't care or that we don't want to be there. But unfortunately, sometimes there are other demands and other patients that might require our attention kind of, more urgently. So I guess having an understanding of that and knowing that that really the best interests of the patient are always in our mind can help everybody understand and help everybody kind of pitch in to assist maybe when and to explain those things for the doctor if they haven't been able to make it there. I think having an understanding that we all kind of have different skills, and that's within the medical field and also between our doctors and nurses. So I think the best way to maximize patient care is for us to use our different skills and work together. Often when you're starting as an intern, your nursing colleague often has better cannulating skills, has more specialized knowledge of renal transplant patients and really has figured out what's going on with the patient before you have. Often, and I've found this in key times in my intern year, a helpful word of advice from a senior nursing colleague can be extremely useful and really help the patient out. I think that those words of advice are best delivered away from the patient, so everybody still has confidence. But just suggesting different management strategies can be useful. Do you think we should put an IDC in? Do you think we should check the blood sugar? Things like that can really be useful to a junior doctor at the right time. But I think at the end of the day, it's worth having an understanding that although you might be frustrated with the doctor not prescribing the medication that you think the patient needs, understand that we have responsibilities to the medical board and also to our prescribing, our ability to prescribe under the PBS. We must really be cautious, because when we have prescribed a drug, if it goes wrong and the patient suffers a poor outcome from it, it is our registration that is on the line. So I guess having a bit of sympathy for the cautious junior doctor prescriber is useful as well. Often in my role in the emergency department as a senior house officer, part of my job is to be I assist other residents or with procedures that they might not be comfortable with or might not be able to do. So often I'll get called in to patients that I haven't seen or haven't worked up myself to do something like a difficult cannulation or to reduce their fracture or close a wound, those sort of things. Often when you've been asked to come in, and sometimes that request comes from one of your nursing colleagues or sometimes from one of the other residents, I think it can be very helpful and encouraging if you offer to give them a hand. So even just a simple, can I open the local anesthetic for you, or do you need a hand holding this arm while you do the difficult cannula? Even if they don't need the help, I think just offering can be really helpful and really encouraging when you're coming in and doing these tasks for a patient that's not really your own. I think that can be really well received. I really enjoy it when I get asked questions, and I would encourage anyone, especially in their graduate nursing years, to, if you don't understand, don't be afraid to ask the question. Generally, this is also best done away from the patient. But if you want to ask, doc, what do you see on the ECG there, or what do you think's going on, or is there anything I can do to help you at the moment? These are all really good questions, and the vast majority of doctors will be happy to explain what they think. And I think we can work together then to kind of match our skills up and look, personally, I really enjoy doing a bit of teaching. So I find that really useful. Occasionally there won't be time, but I think the majority of the time, just ask the question and don't be afraid. Sometimes in our role, we get called a lot of different directions all at one time, and we might unfortunately miss our opportunity to go and communicate the patient plan directly to you as their treating nurse. So it's worth keeping an eye on the clinical notes in the electronic system, where the plans might appear without anyone letting you know. I know it's frustrating, and we don't do it on purpose, but unfortunately sometimes I'll put a plan in the notes that I haven't communicated directly. So just keeping an eye on those can be useful as well. When it happens that you have a really sick patient, stay with them until you've got them stable. And that's a job for that's your job as a nurse, and also my job as the treating doctor. It may take a little while to figure out exactly what we need to do, but we need a team in there to help out. So when it is going downhill, please stay and give a hand. When you see something that doesn't feel right, I'd trust your gut and tell somebody about it. So when you see something, a prescription or a medication that the dose seems off, or you don't think it's for the right patient, or you can't really understand what's going on there, you're probably right. There probably is something up. Unfortunately, in the healthcare system, prescribing errors happen all the time, and it is one of the major causes of morbidity in hospitals. So if you see something that doesn't stack up, let the junior doctor know, and they can have a look and see if they can fix it. Look, it's people may seem irritated by this, but ignore them, because it's in the best interest of the patient to make sure they're getting the right medications. And often you're the RN kind of involved in their care, you're the best person, especially in the emergency department, to really see what medications they're getting. And you're probably the only person that will check them at those early stages. So that responsibility really falls on your shoulders. And with that, I would encourage you, if something doesn't seem right, to really speak to the doctor about it. But I guess all in all, I guess a thanks to my nursing colleagues for being great at what they do, and for always having the best interests of the patient at heart, and really for as I spoke about in the kind of introduction, the most important thing about healthcare is really being there for the patient and being able to communicate things and really helping somebody through a difficult time. Often you are best placed to do that. So when you take that responsibility seriously and really use your opportunity as a nurse to communicate with patients, I think that's the most important thing. And it's something that I really appreciate when I don't always have the time to be doing that in my current role. So I think yeah, we're all a team, and if I can encourage a cohesive environment, then that's something I would really like to do. So,
Lewis, thank you so very much for your time today. I'm so appreciative that you've come onto the podcast today and been able to share all these pearls of wisdom. I think even just these last few minutes of all of these tips, these absolute golden nuggets that you've listed as well, and you've really taken so much time to think about it as well, and it's I guess we're all going to learn and have something that we can take away from this as nurses, and I guess it's pretty clear probably why I've chosen to sort of ask to have you on the show today, Lewis, that you care so much about what you do, and it's certainly come across in today's episode. So thank you so much again, mate.
Well, thanks so much for having me on, Ben. I really appreciate it.
Done. And I'll might just finish it off there. And thank you so much, mate. I'll have a chat to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, man.